Hey, Ryan, since you're not going to the game, where are you planning on watching the Wildcats?
I'll be stuck at the office, but I wish I could be lounging at home in front of my TV.
Yeah, me too. I've been thinking about getting like a big comfy recliner from Sam Levitt's Furniture.
Ooh, stylish.
Sam Levitt's Furniture has specials on a wide selection of recliners, so you can watch the game in style. You can check out a bunch of options at their Tucson locations. I'm thinking of getting one with swivel action.
Ooh.
But I kind of like the one I saw with cup holders.
Well, while Justin makes up his mind about which recliner he likes best, let's talk some sports.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
What's going on? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Here with Bruce Pasco, Dominic Bachaco. I am Justin Spears. You're listening to this on the Wildcaster app or Tucson.com. So, wow.
These things are getting harder and harder to start.
It's really becoming, I wouldn't necessarily say a chore because we always love doing these podcasts, but it's the topic of conversation is always
evolving.
Hard to find.
It's evolving.
Arizona, they lost to UCLA 82-74 Thursday night. First time they lost at home all season, and the first time they've lost at home since, well, last year to UCLA. Arizona is now 79-3 since the start of the 2013 season. Bruce, yeah. I'm just going to go ahead and ask you, does UCLA just have Arizona's number?
Well, I don't know. You know, there's certainly maybe a little bit to that. They got confidence. They've done it before. But frankly, there's only three guys on the floor last night for them that did it the previous year that were there. So you wonder. I mean, and this was different than losing to UCLA close last year to a veteran UCLA team, and it was different than losing to that really good Oregon team a couple years ago, and that this was a UCLA team that's kind of a little bit shaky, and you know, they've got a couple really good veteran players, but a lot of youth, and they're not exceptionally deep, and lo and behold, they go in there and they beat them pretty good. It was probably the most shocking of those three for sure.
There's one team every year that's not afraid to come into McHale and play Arizona. It's UCLA.
Oh yeah,
that's true.
So I don't know if they have their number, but.
Fearless.
Well, in the last, Bruce, this was in your scouting report for the UCLA game, and they've split the last 12 games, or dating back to a certain period, they've split the last 12 games, actually, even though Arizona's kind of dominated as of late. Overall, I mean, they're very evenly matched.
Yeah, and a lot of great games in the Pac-12 tournament, a lot of great games at Pauley Pavilion. Arizona, you know, won there last year before when Alonzo Trier came back from the first game after his suspension. They look great in that game. And then they come back later a month later and UCLA spanks them here at McHale. So
the latest,
know, it's been fun.
The latest in the Arizona UCLA saga, another Arizona loss. DeAndre Ayton, another double double, 16-12. Alonzo Trier had 17 points on 7-13 shooting. Parker Jackson Cartwright had 3 turnovers to 4 assists, didn't play particularly well to his standards. Raleigh Alkins, only 5 points. His struggles continue over the last 2 games. Bruce, what's Arizona's focus moving forward? I mean, we've talked about defense all year. Is there something we can dive into more than that, or is it really just a matter of getting better on that side of the floor?
Yeah, that's a lot of it. I mean, and for them, that's, you know, that carries over into their offense. They start feeling better about themselves and they get stops, and that's not happening last night, and it wasn't happening, and that's, they seem to have a, you know, a lack of confidence and lack of energy because that defense was down. So, you know, it's getting to be a cliche around here, but it really does start there, you know, and with that C coming up, they've got a really difficult matchup. You know, the SC has veterans and experience and size to match them at every position.
Mm-hmm. And the latest KenPom rankings has Arizona's defense. We talked about this in the last podcast. I hate to be that guy that brings up KenPom because I feel like that guy. But Arizona has now fallen to number 111 in the country.
Yeah, and that's in defensive efficiency, and we joke about KenPom, but it has become kind of a common number, and it's good because it measures it's regardless of pace or things. It's a really objective way to look at how many points you give up per possession. That's what it is, and they're not very good at it right now. And it's astounding the efficiency they have offensively versus the contrast in defensively efficiency. Mm-hmm. And I know it's obviously driving Sean Miller crazy that he can't get that to translate a little bit better.
And now the Pac-12 race, with that loss last night, the Pac-12 race has gotten pretty interesting.
Wide open.
The Arizona has USC on Saturday. We'll talk to Joey Kaufman from the OC Register. He'll be joining the podcast to talk about USC, FBI investigation, et cetera, et cetera. But Dusan Ristic last night said, okay, now we have to get to a point. He's like, okay, where do we go from here? When you're in the middle of February and you're sitting there asking yourself, where do we go from here? Yeah. That brings up a lot of red flags. And I'm looking at Arizona thinking, well, you know, you're supposed to be arguably the best team that Arizona has ever put on a floor. Even Lute Olson at the beginning of the year said that this is probably the most talented team U of A has ever had. And yet, this is looking like it's going to be another disappointing year for Arizona.
We had that conversation in November when they lost three straight in the Bahamas. We were on the phone with Bruce asking, where do they go from here?
Where do we go next? From here?
And, right. You know, it's been a reoccurring issue, a topic all year is, okay, what do the Wildcats do now? You know, they lost the first Pac-12 game to Colorado. What do they do now? They go out and rattle off, what, seven straight? And then they come in and obviously struggling again now. So I don't want to say this team's struggling to find an identity. They're an offensive team. They're never going to be that good on defense. But they need to step up and find some kind of spark on the defensive side of the ball. Or like you said, Justin, it's going to be another disappointing end of the season.
Yeah.
What I think can be a spark, not a spark, but we talked about it before we came on air. What is Arizona's X factor right now? You look at their last two games, Alonzo Trier and DeAndre Ayton are always going to do Trier and Ayton things. That's not going to change. They're always going to have good games. Trier might have a slow start here and there, but his numbers always average out. Arizona's last two losses, Raleigh Alkins has made four buckets, five turnovers. He's turned the ball over more than he's put the ball in the basket. And they've lost two games. Is Raleigh Alkins the Wildcats' X factor?
Yes. Yeah, I think he might be, and you can make a case defensively as well. I mean, you look at that starting lineup, and all of those guys are extremely talented offensively, but defensively, there's none of them that really stand out. And Raleigh has that size, that physical nature to him that makes you think it could translate, and he's shown signs of being that. But right now, they don't really have a defensive stopper, and off the bench, we're seeing, you know, they used Acod and Pinder a little bit more last night trying to find that. But I think with Raleigh, it's a little bit of both. They really need him, and they need him as that third weapon, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not his fault. It's not his lack of trying. I think I think the foot has really been an issue. Even if it's true that he has zero soreness at this point, and I'm not sure exactly where he stands from day to day, but just the fact that he's been out of rhythm, sitting out a day here or there, sitting out a game here or there, and coming back, and it's tough for a lot of guys to do that.
Well, go ahead.
No, I'll say, could this possibly be a mental thing for Raleigh? Because, Bruce, I don't know how many serious injuries you've had in your lifetime, but I do remember that I've dislocated my left shoulder six times. And every single time I put on shoulder pads and went back on the field, I was always worried, okay, is this going to be the practice where I dislocate my shoulder again?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it really affected me.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing was when he first – one of the first times he came back, I can't remember exactly, was he did that when he had soreness and sat out against Cal, and then he came back and he pulled some kind of almost 360 reverse dunk. I don't know if you remember that, McHale. And I remember asking him, were you worried? And he said, no, it was just in the moment. But so that was fine. But you wonder, like, you know, when he's got time to think about it, or, you know, in just some transition when he doesn't have the ball, does it occur to him? Who knows? I mean, it's, you know, certainly his play is not normal. So there's something there, you know. And if it's not that, it's just the fact that, you know, he's a little out of rhythm and maybe that affects his shot. And I think with him and some of the teammates too, you get to the point where you have a couple games, there's so much pressure on this team because, like you guys were saying, that they were expected to be, you know, preseason number three or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're just not quite performing at that level. There's so much pressure on everybody, and especially a guy like Raleigh, you know, you could just see that, you know, you're going to force it maybe a little bit and think about things maybe a little bit more than you should.
Yeah.
So I think Dusan, actually, what Dusan said last night was interesting in that, hey, we need to go out and have more fun. I mean, that's probably another part of the problem. The guys are so worried about
the effort too.
There's so much pressure on them. They're so worried about, doing this and that. They just need to go out and be loose and have fun, and that's not really been happening a whole lot.
Well, and Bruce, you mentioned Riley Alkins as kind of the third guy on offense for Arizona. I think having that third guy, and you look at the best college teams around the country, there's not a whole lot of teams that have three guys like Arizona does, three elite top-level scorers like Arizona does. So Riley Alkins, I think now more than ever, Arizona needs that third kind of trigger on offense, because on nights they struggle on the offensive side, they're not going to win many games. I mean, you saw last night, they weren't as sharp as they've been on offense, 44% shooting from the floor, 36 from three, just a bit below their season averages.
Yeah.
But when they're not on and firing on all cylinders on offense, I mean, they can't stop a team, so they're going to be in trouble. So the more Alkins steps up and is kind of that, I don't want to say third wheel, but is that third scorer, yeah, and is firing, it's going to help Arizona. I was looking at these stats last night. I mean, when Arizona gives up 80 points, they very rarely win. They're 4-4 this year when giving up 80 points, 15-21 in the Sean Miller era. So they're always a team that they're going to beat you on defense, or it's going to be hard for them to win. And yeah, I think that's where Riley Alkins comes in.
Again, the other thing is that's completely the opposite of the way Sean Miller would like his team to be. I mean, he wants the team to be consistent defensively, so that when you have the off night offensively, you're still going to be in the game and have a chance to win it. And this is a weird situation where we're seeing it, where they know the defense is going to be shaky, and they're just hoping the offense is going. And like you said, they need Riley, they need everybody, they need Parker Jackson Cartwright to be 7-1, assist turnovers, you know, stuff like that has to happen. Mm-hmm. Didn't used to be that way.
But they got to have perfect nights in offense every night to have a chance to make a deep run in March.
But I mean, there were points last night where I looked at Parker kind of suspect, because you had Jalen Hands and Aaron Holiday, and they just took it to him, mm-hmm, and they made
Jalen Hands,
and they made it known. Specifically in the first half, mm-hmm, when they kind of got out to, I think they got out to like an 8-3 lead or something like that. And they were, I wouldn't say they were pressing, but they had Aaron Holiday and Jalen Hands on Parker, mm-hmm, as soon as they inbounded the ball. And what did Parker do? He lost the first one. Jalen Hands gets a bucket. And then immediately right after that, almost gives up the ball right after that. And then Jalen Hands, what, he had that 9-1 run just by himself at the end of the first half?
Oh, made three threes in the last 54 seconds.
So
yeah.
I just feel like when it comes down to the point guard battle, if Parker wins that night, then that's where Arizona becomes successful. And that's why I say Parker's more of an X factor than Raleigh.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that. I mean, we've been looking at that all year as Parker is kind of, you know, Arizona's pulse. And,
however, you look at Raleigh Alkins in the last two games, he's had terrible games,
yeah,
and they end up losing. So, man, I don't know. I just never seen a talented Arizona team like this, and then we just sit there and be like, okay, where do we go from here?
Yeah, it's hard. Although I think Jalen Hands is really, really good. I think he was a 5-star prospect. I remember seeing him play in one of the summer showcases a couple years ago, and you know, I know Arizona was looking at him, but he was pretty much early commit to UCLA. Everybody knew that's where he was going, and he's a talent that I think is just sort of coming into his own. He struggled a little bit early this year getting used to things, but he's got a quickness and you know, some scoring ability about him that you just don't see. Whereas with Parker Jackson Cartwright, you've got a really reliable senior who's been around, been through it. He's pretty steady with the ball, and it's a different kind of deal with him. And you know, you're going with it that way. It's just it was a tough matchup for last night.
Raleigh Alkins last two games: 4 of 20 from the floor, 1 of 8 from 3-point land, 5 turnovers and 9 points. PJC's last two games: 15 points, 5 of 9 shooting. The big numbers for PJC, obviously, always assists and turnovers. 9 assists, 6 turnovers. He's turning the ball over more than
way
usual.
More.
But
not nice.
We're going to have to see what they can do against USC. Justin, what we got on tap?
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and bring on Joey Kaufman from the OC Register. He'll give us all the information on the Trojans as they head into Saturday. That game is at 8:30 on ESPN. Bruce, thanks for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, we're here with Joey Kaufman from the OC Register. Joey, thanks for hopping on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, Joey, so Thursday night, USC had a heartbreaker to ASU. They were up by 7 with just a couple minutes remaining, and then ASU just went on a tear, led by Trey Holder. Joey, where do you just kind of sum up USC's loss, and I guess where do they go from here?
It's another tough one because if you go back to their UCLA loss on last Saturday, they were up by 9 with about 8 minutes to go. This time, they're up 7 by 5 minutes to go. So this team's shown they've been able to go on the road and play well, but they have nothing to show for it because they haven't been able to really close out in the final second. So I think it's a particularly tough one for USC because it doesn't play either Arizona State or Arizona at home. So this is kind of their one stab at really good quality wins, and they already whiffed on the first one, and then they whiffed at UCLA. So those were big wins that they kind of missed an opportunity to get and really add to their resume. At this point, they're really desperate for one of those quadrant one top-tier wins in the tournament. They haven't beaten a quad one team in Pac-12 play, largely because the Pac-12's kind of been up and down and the imbalanced scheduling. So it makes Saturday's game really important for them. They could win and be in a tie for first in the conference and get a really kind of signature win in conference play, or they could be 0-3 on this road trip and really kind of reeling.
Joey, the overall arcs to USC and Arizona seasons are kind of funny to look at. Both came out in their preseason AP top 10 teams, obviously the two favorites to make a run in March in the Pac-12 and to win the Pac-12. SC was supposed to be Arizona's biggest threat. Both teams come out, lose 3 games straight early in the year, and then kind of go through this rough patch in the middle, then rattle off some wins. Arizona had a 7-game win streak. USC just had a 6-game win streak. And then both teams now coming off back-to-back losses. So
parallel seasons.
I mean, so all that into consideration, what's kind of the Trojans' narrative right now, and what are they looking at coming into Tucson outside of just looking for a big marquee win to get into the tournament?
Probably, if you said before this road trip, I think the parallels kind of continue. I think defense has kind of been the issue for both teams. This has been kind of Arizona's one of the worst defenses under Sean Miller. And at USC, for the first 2 months of the season, it was pretty much the worst defense in KenPom under Andy Enfield. They really couldn't seem to figure things out. Then they figured things out on defense, and it helped them on their 6-game winning streak. And they've kind of continued to play well on defense on the last two trips to UCLA and into Arizona State. But what kind of killed them in the end lately has just been little details toward the end of the game, not getting good shots, maybe trying to almost run out clock and desperately hold on to a lead because they just couldn't score in the final minutes against UCLA. They didn't score a field goal for the final 2.5 minutes or so. They didn't score a field goal the last 2 minutes at ASU. So for whatever reason, this team in late game situations lately, you're going to go on the road and it's going to be close games. You're not really going to go on the road and beat a team by 10. So they got to be really smart in close game situations and against kind of the cream of the crop of the conferences. They haven't done it. And if you look over the entirety of Andy Enfield's tenures, they've kind of struggled in these situations before. Last year they went on a similar 3-game skid when they went to Poly Pavilion, then went on the Arizona road trip. So if there's kind of one thing that they've lacked in recent years, is just been able to really go on the road and get marquee wins. They've been able to kind of get the monkey off their back in some respects, like they won at Oregon earlier this year, but that was the first win at Oregon in Eugene since late aughts, around 2008 or so, 2009. That was a big win, but Oregon's not a tournament team, and they beat Utah for the first time in at least 5 or 6 years, but Utah's not really a tournament team either. So in terms of that kind of really upper crust, they really have lacked those wins. And Saturday's a huge kind of stage for them. Really, probably you could argue the biggest regular season game of Andy Enfield's tenure. So it's a big one.
Wow. And something unlike Arizona, we sit here and talk about the parallel seasons that each program is having. USC has dealt with a plethora of injuries, and the most recent one is with their big man Benny Boatwright. Joey, you had a story on this. He had a callus.
Yes, he had a callus, which was under the ball on his right foot. Oh. So it's pretty much directly under his big toe. Which
gross.
I've seen the photo. It looks pretty nasty. it's not what you want. It's, and for a while it's been kind of unclear on what it was. It was called a plantar wart or a blister, but he kind of went into some more detail this week. It was a callus, and the callus was first shaved down in December, and they thought, okay, he'll be in the clear. He missed two games, and he goes to Hawaii in the Diamond Head Classic. He scores 33 points in the title game, and it looks like he's kind of turned their season around. And this was a guy who declared for the draft and was supposed to come back as one of their premier players, a stretch four who can do kind of a bunch of different things for them. But then after Hawaii, they find out that some of the particles that were shaved down from the callus got inside his foot and caused an infection. So then he missed two more games because of the foot injury. And even when he's been healthy, he just hasn't looked as good as he had. Just kind of, and if you think about it, you think maybe it's only a callus, but if you're a basketball player, you're pushing off on your right foot, and especially kind of your toe.
You're jumping, and
that affects so much of what you do, and it seemed like just his timing on his jump shot was off and a lot of stuff, and maybe that's been the real reason why his shooting's been so up and down for most of the season, although I thought he looked much better last night. So I'm curious if he's kind of in the clear, but he's been a guy who they haven't been able to get to 100%. He's important for what they really want to be able to do. And they've already been missing D'Anthony Melton, their best defender, because of the FBI investigation. So, and those were two of their five starters last year that they've really kind of lacked.
And wow, FBI investigation. Speaking of the devil. So this is the official Pac-12 game of the FBI. Both teams were involved in the FBI probe that was released earlier in
September.
Man, it feels like it was forever ago. Mm-hmm. But man, the recent investigation has kind of turned a weird loop. I don't even know where to describe it, but there was one of the investigators that was investigating all these college programs of corruption. He gets arrested for corruption. For using the government's money.
Corruption.
He used the government's money for, what was it, like drinks and gambling and food and stuff like that, all in Las Vegas.
This is the Wall Street Journal report that came out, I think, yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the agents was supposedly compromised. So
that's what you want to hear in a corruption scandal.
Right. But I don't know how much of a – I know for USC's Tony Bland, he was the assistant who was fired. It seems like if, in his case, that guy was going to be a key witness in court against him, and I wonder if that will be taken less seriously or thrown out or kind of what. That'll be kind of interesting to watch.
Yeah. So, I know in Arizona, especially now after back-to-back losses, the tone is – it's a bleak outlook right now, and fans are obviously trying to keep their hopes high. The FBI scandal has kind of had a weird effect the entire season. It's kind of been looming in the background. It hasn't really been at the forefront, but it's been in the back of everyone's minds. I think it's safe to say that. USC, like Justin, you guys said, in a very similar light, they had a recruit, Tayshaun Cherry, was named in the complaint, had dismissed a coach. You know, what's been the attitude in USC all year amid this dark cloud of the FBI scandal?
I'll ask you what it's been like in Arizona, I guess. But at least for USC, I don't think it's been as looming the cloud lately, and I don't think it's been maybe as serious at other schools, because while USC was named in the report, the timeline was a smaller time frame, and the money was less than other schools maybe were paying out. And it primarily related to a player, D'Anthony Melton, who hasn't played this year, and a recruit who's since decommitted, and a coach who's no longer with the program. So I think, on the one hand, the D'Anthony Melton thing was a big distraction for these guys for the first 2 months of the season and kind of a looming deal, because there were several points where they thought they were going to get him back. And the school found that a family friend took a plane ticket and a hotel room that ended up allowing him not to come back. And that was kind of a separate deal from what the complaint actually says. So they found something outside the complaint and eventually decided to hold him out for the year. So his kind of saga was something that was very much in the background. Lately, it kind of hasn't been, because they've kind of unequivocally ruled him out for the season. But probably the biggest issue for them has just been they've missed Tony Bland. He was the associate head coach. He was the guy who recruited a ton of these players. if you've ever kind of seen him interviewed or interacted with him, he was a very big, gregarious personality.
Wow.
He's a guy who would kind of be able to give players tough love and get in their face if they weren't playing very well. But he was also a very supportive guy. I recruited a ton of the guys, and they really liked him. So he was a good, important presence to have on their bench. So they've also just – that's been probably as big a factor. So I don't know if it's as much of a cloud looming over them, but they just particularly missed Tony Bland, and they've missed De'Anthony Melton. Just kind of those were two important people to what they wanted to do this year.
Joey, it's crazy. Jess and I are sitting here with our jaws on the table because you just described Book Richardson. Like, I mean, word for word.
Word for word described Book Richardson. Man, that is so crazy because when Sean Miller – or when they lost to Colorado and he said, I don't know if I could reach this team – and we sit here and think, well, that was Book Richardson's job. You know, for the last few years, every time Sean Miller got in these players' grills and just really roasted him for not playing well, and he was really hard on some players, Book Richardson was that guy that kind of calmed everybody down on the bench. But when you talk to him, he was very boisterous, very animated. And when you sit here and describe Tony Bland, it's like, wow, this is Book Richardson 2.0. And these are the guys that are being investigated for corruption and paying recruits.
Yeah, I think the thing that was especially important with Tony Bland is Enfield is very much not like Sean Miller in the sense that he's not really a big yeller or a screamer. He's not really going to get in. He doesn't really get in guys' faces too much. He's very dry and sarcastic. At times, he almost seems kind of just distant. In a way, he's not kind of that in-your-face guy. So I think Tony Bland was almost able to do both, get in the guy's face he's not playing well, or kind of build them up. So he was very important for them.
So, Joey, looking ahead to Saturday's game, if USC loses, I mean, you talked about it earlier, they're still looking for that big marquee win. They don't really have it this season. Arizona would obviously provide that. If they don't get a win at McHale Center, where does USC turn? Is it just a matter of winning as many games to get to the tournament? Or, I mean, what's kind of the script after Saturday?
Yeah, it kind of would be similar to last year, I think. Last year they had this three-game skid to Arizona and Arizona State and UCLA. It was actually four games, take that back, because they lost to Oregon before UCLA. And then they go to the last homestand last year. They needed to beat the Washington schools. They beat the Washington schools. They won a game in the Pac-12 tournament. So we're not as far late in the season as we were a year ago. But it's still mid-February, but I think they would need to be kind of what they're doing last year, where they have to reel off a ton of wins at the end. They'll still get chances for quad one wins, presuming Colorado and Utah keep winning. They'll do that Mountain West trip in a little bit. So, but it would basically mean they would have to win basically every game and try and win out as much as they can. They probably couldn't lose more than one or two the rest of the way. So Saturday is really huge for them.
Pending a major meltdown on Saturday, if USC huge. Wins, are they in?
If they win, are they in? Probably not, because there's still enough time to kind of play themselves off. But I think if they win, they're in a lot better shape, where you maybe don't have to sweep Utah and Colorado. Maybe you can just try and get a split there. So I think it would put them in a much better position. And you also have a case where this is a USC team that was 10th in the preseason. They shouldn't be a team in theory that's just trying to get to the tournament and have to go to Dayton and do a play-in game. I mean, they're a team that should have, even as of a week ago, should have been trying to compete maybe for, you think maybe if they beat UCLA and ASU, maybe they're kind of vying for a 7th seed and maybe an easier route going to the second weekend, because this is a team I think a lot of people expected. Maybe they weren't going to go to the Final Four or anything like that, but you should at least try and go to the Sweet 16, which is something they're able to do under Tim Floyd, but that's been 10 years ago. They haven't really kind of been able to make a run in the tournament. They won two games last year, but they still ended up in the round of 32. So I think that's another thing, that even if they do make the tournament, there might be people who will be kind of bummed, because this was a group that maybe should have aspired to higher than that.
All right, that's Joey Kaufman from the Orange County Register. The Arizona Wildcats take on the USC Trojans, not at 8:30. We said 8:30 originally, but it will be played at 8:15 for tip-off on ESPN. Joey, where can we find you on Twitter?
It's Joey, J-O-E-Y-R, as in rabbit, and then Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N.
Okay. All right. Well, you guys know where to find him at. Get him on Twitter for everything all related to USC. Joey, thank you for joining the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always good to talk college basketball.
Appreciate you. All right. Well, I guess that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Like us on Facebook, Instagram. We are on Instagram now. Follow us on Twitter. And as always, don't forget to download that free Wildcaster app.
You can get the podcast.
Download that. You get the podcast on the app. Download it today. We'll see you next time.